Hello and welcome to this third edition of Storytellers on a Mission, brought to you by The Hatch. I'm Tom Baudette, your host, and The Hatch is a ragtag band of rebel fundraisers devoted to the work of producing great shows to raise money for important groups and services in our communities. Our mission is simple: have fun, do good. Our most recent do-gooder fun thing took place on April 19th at Brattleboro's Latches Theater in a storytelling performance sponsored by our friends at Ford Panel and Farnham Insulators to benefit the Morningside Shelter for the Homeless in Brattleboro. We're thrilled to report that over $35,000 was raised to further the important work at Morningside. This work makes a difference in a lot of lives, and hopefully the work of our generous guest storytellers will make a difference for them. Our host for the evening was my friend Peter Sagal of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me fame. Also joining us were Cindy Pierce, Peter Aguero, and Ian Chillog, all veteran hardcore ninja storytellers. Well, time doesn't allow us to air the entire evening, so we've picked some plums out for you, starting with Moth and This American Life veteran Elna Baker. Listen.
So I'm 28 years old, and I'm flying to Siberia to tell my parents that I recently lost my virginity. Which, you know, most children don't feel compelled to do, and most parents don't want you to do. But my parents are different, and my family is Mormon. And for Mormons, sex before marriage is considered the second most serious sin next to murder. Murder being a heinous crime, and sex, as it turns out, being awesome. And, you know, in this year that I had taken a break from being a practicing Mormon and eventually, you know, ventured into having sex, I was racked with guilt and terrified what would happen if my parents found out, you know. Worst case scenario, they would disown me. And I worried about it so much that finally I thought, the only way to know is just go there and tell them. But also, I had written an article for Glamour magazine about losing my virginity. And it was coming out in 3 months, and so I figured I should warn them. And the article, it was supposed to be this heartfelt piece about what it's like to lose your virginity later in life, but then, you know, Glamour got a hold of it, and it was called, Guess What? I'm Not a Virgin Anymore. And there was a photo of me, which, to be fair, I did pose for this photo, but it was a photo of me dangling a cherry over my mouth. So, you know, not looking good for me and my parents. And as if that's not bad enough, it was coming out the same week as my younger sister's wedding to another Mormon at the Mormon temple. And, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was upstage my sister's wedding. You know, the entire extended family would be there, and they'd be like, Julia's getting married. Elna's going to hell. So I decided, you know, with 3 months' time to just go fly to Siberia and tell my parents face to face. And that's not a joke. My parents actually do live in Siberia. My father works there. He runs a titanium factory because he's an evil villain. And actually, it had been a dream of mine to go visit and run down the halls of the factory and just start knocking stuff over and be like, it's daddy's factory. Just make Russian men pick it up. So yeah, I flew out there, and it takes 3 days to get from New York City to Siberia. So, you know, I had plenty of alone time to prepare this speech. And I was partly worried, you know, that they could maybe decide to completely cut me off. But I think more than that, my biggest fear was that I was going to disappoint my parents beyond heartbreak, which I'd never done before. And I didn't know what that felt like, and I was so afraid of what it was going to feel like, because I love my parents, and I love my family. In fact, we were in the car on the way up, and I was telling some story, which, you know, when you don't, I didn't think it was a weird anecdote, but I was saying how every Saturday morning in my family, when we all wake up, we'll just all crawl into my parents' bed, all seven of us, and, like, lay in bed and joke around together. And we still do that to this day whenever everyone's home. And Peter Aguero said that was the most disturbing family story he had ever heard in his life. But that's a Mormon family for you. And so much of growing up Mormon, it's all, like, you don't have, your social unit is your family. And you spend all your time with your family. And, you know, those Mormon commercials are true. It's just happy families together. And I think part of the reason for this is that Mormons believe a very specific thing, which is that families can be together forever. If all members of the family keep God's commandments, then in the afterlife, they can all go to the highest level of heaven. So I had just broken the second biggest commandment, which meant that I was not going to be with my family in heaven for eternity. So I was essentially going to Siberia to tell my parents that I wouldn't be with them in the afterlife and that we only had a little bit more time together. And so, you know, my goal was to tell them right when I got there because, you know, then we would have 2 weeks to repair our relationship. But then I stepped off the plane and the first thing my mother said when she saw me was, "You look different." And I thought, oh gosh, she knows, she knows. So I thought, well, I can't tell her now. And so I decided I would tell them the next day. And we went on this hike and we went up to the top of this little mountain and there was this beautiful outlook and view and it was peaceful. And I thought, okay, I'll tell my parents now. And just as I was about to say something, my mother looked out and said, "Look at all that pure, pure white snow." And I was like, I can't tell them now. And so I didn't tell them. And for 2 weeks, I just was on vacation with my parents. And it was one of the best times I've ever had with my parents because, I don't know, everything we did together, it's like it meant more because I was so afraid that I would never have it again. And so I appreciated it so much more than I ever had before. And in Siberia, there's all these abandoned villages, so you can just, like, sneak into houses and... which is what we did, and we would, like, take stuff. Because, you know, we're Mormon, but we're also American, so. And so, you know, I spent 2 weeks with them there on this trip, and then suddenly it was the last day of my trip, and I still hadn't told them. And I woke up that morning, and I thought, okay, I'm going to tell them today. But my dad had already, you know, gotten up to go to work and, you know, hammer or... I'm sure there's more to running a titanium factory than hammering. But anyway, my dad was at work, and so my mom had made me breakfast. And I thought, I'll tell my mom, she can tell my dad. And so as I'm preparing myself to get the nerve up to do this, I cut into the eggs, and some of the egg yolks splashed up into my eye. And I went, oh, my God. My mother dropped her silverware and said, "Do not take the Lord's name in vain in front of me. Do you know how much that hurts me?" And I thought, oh, I can never tell them. I can never tell them. No, I can never tell them anything. And I started getting emotional. I started crying, and I was pretending it was because there was egg in my eye. But really, I was thinking, like, is this what it means to be an adult? Like, you can't tell your parents about your life anymore? Because when you're Mormon and you're living a PG-13 life, you can tell your parents everything. But now I was like our occasional NC-17 life, and it just, I couldn't talk about anything. It was going to be different now. And so an hour later, my dad got home, and they were going to take me to the airport, and it's a 3-hour drive to the airport, and they wanted to spend more time with me, so they decided to come with me to the airport. And as we were getting into the cab, I thought, okay, this is my last chance. I'm going to do this now. But then my dad started making friends with the cab driver, and then I was like, great, now I have to tell my parents and the cab driver. And the cab driver was really curious about their time in Russia. And he asked my dad, he said, if you could change anything about this country, what would it be? And my dad immediately answered, the alcoholism. It's ruining this country. And the driver asked, well, how do you fix that, though? And my dad said, the answer is that you never take the first sip. Because if you never open yourself up to temptation, then you prevent your life from being ruined. And I was sitting in the front seat, and so I decided to chime in, and I say, well, you know, Dad, you taught me that growing up, but you know I drink now, and it's actually totally possible to drink in moderation. And I turn around, and my parents' faces are white, and they say, what? You drink? And I was like, oh, you didn't know that? They're like, no. And I said, well, I told you I was on a break from being Mormon. What did you think that meant? And they said, well, we thought it meant you weren't going to church on Sunday. So I realized, I'm like, we are on two totally different pages here. And, you know, it was wrong of me to think that they would understand this break or this need for a break. I tried really hard to be Mormon. I lived in New York for 9 years as a practicing Mormon, and I lived it, like, to the letter. And it was so hard to have faith, because faith is a very hard thing to have just in general. And I would have all these crises of faith, and every time I did, I was told, well, you know, it's because you're not being obedient enough. So I would try to overcorrect and just become more Mormon. And after doing this over and over again, I finally thought, you know, I don't know what it's like to not be Mormon. And I'd seen that documentary, The Devil's Playground, where Amish kids, when they're 16, get this year Rumspringa. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to take a Rumspringa of my own. And I mean, I genuinely thought I was like, well, and then be Mormon again, right? Because obviously none of this is going to be that fun. And so, you know, I had taken this year, and it was hard at 28 to, you know, try drinking for the first time or smoking or sex or coffee. Not in that order. I mean, coffee was not the scariest choice. And as I did each of these things, it kind of opened me up into like, oh, like, I'm a human. This is being a human. And I didn't know how much it was going to change my life and perspective. And it did. And I could tell I was going to have a hard time just going back to being Mormon. And my life had changed. And now I had to figure out how to share this life with my parents. Well, upon finding out that I drank, they were so upset that they gave me the silent treatment, the entire 3-hour car ride to the airport. And then when they dropped me off, my dad hugged me goodbye, and he said into my ear, he said, this break of yours, is it worth it? And I thought about it because, you know, I didn't know if it was worth it, but I had had one moment of clarity a couple months earlier, and it's not the kind of thing you can really share with your parents, but it had happened. I was at a holiday party, and oh, when I first started drinking, I would only have one drink because I'd seen Girls Gone Wild, and I didn't know how many they'd had, so I was like, ugh. So I would have just one, but it was a holiday party, and so there was free. I had a couple drinks. I remember even saying to someone, I was like, God, everyone's so much more agreeable tonight. Just getting along with everyone. So I had a couple drinks, and there was this guy I liked, and it turned out that night he told me he liked me too, and we started kissing, and then, you know, it got later in the night, and he said, let's go somewhere. Let's check into the Chelsea Hotel, which is, you know, this famed artist hotel in Chelsea. And, you know, I had never done anything with a guy, but I thought, no, I'm on a break. I can do this. So I said, yes. And we took a cab to the Chelsea Hotel, and I remember the sound that my heels made on the marble, this checkered black and white marble, as I walked to the front desk, and, you know, it was like 4 a.m, and there was an old woman with like frizzy red hair, and her back was to me, and she was filing mail, and so I leaned in, and I whispered, I was like, excuse me, is it too late to check in? And she turned around, and she had smeared lipstick and a cigarette hanging out of her mouth, and she was like, actually, most people check in right about now. It was like I'd gone to this other dimension. And we went upstairs, and, you know, I didn't end up having sex with this guy, but it was the first time I was ever naked with someone. It was just a special experience to have. And we both fell asleep. And I woke up probably an hour later with like a... You know, it was like the Mormon of 28 years in me woke up, and I thought, what am I doing here? I mean, he's naked, I'm naked, oh my gosh. And I started to panic, and I think my biggest fear when I decided to stop being Mormon was that if I did, my light would go out, because I was told that God is truth and light, and sin is darkness. So by committing sin, you're just bringing darkness into you. And so as I was going into this downward spiral and panic, I stopped and I thought, wait, I still have my light. And now it's going to be okay. And that was the moment of clarity that taught me I could do this. But, you know, I couldn't tell that story to my dad. So instead, when he asked me if I break what's worth it, I just said, I don't know. And I got in the airplane, and the door shut, and I realized I flew all the way to Siberia to tell my parents I lost my virginity, and instead I just told them that I drink in moderation. Well, a month before the article came out, I ended up calling them and telling them on the phone. And it was really, really hard. And, you know, my gay best friend told me the speech I gave was like literally every gay person's coming out speech. I said, you know, there's this thing I've been keeping from you. It's hurting our relationship, and I'm not doing this to hurt you, but I need to be honest with who I am. I'm 28, and I lost my virginity. And my parents' response was, you know, best case scenario. They said that they were incredibly disappointed and that I would regret it, and I would never fully be happy. But they did say that that I'm their daughter and that they'll always love me. And then the next time I ended up seeing them was at my younger sister's wedding, which was at the Salt Lake City Temple. And because I'm no longer a practicing Mormon, I wasn't actually allowed to go into the wedding, but I was also a bridesmaid, so I had to show up and be there for pictures. So I had to spend the 3-hour service in the parking lot in a bridesmaid's dress waiting for my family. And it was so cold. It was like freezing out there. And I had this moment. I remember looking up at the temple, which is beautiful. Mormon temples are beautiful. And I remember thinking, like, what if Mormonism is true, you know? What if everything I was raised to think is true and I'm walking away from the truth? Like, is this what the afterlife is going to feel like? Like, my whole family, everyone I love is in this beautiful, white, glowing building, and I'm in a parking lot in a bridesmaid's dress for eternity. But then I started thinking about my break, you know, because it had been a year and I had to make up my mind. And I think it's funny. I think some people can just change or be different or be decisive about what they want. And then other people like me, you invent this idea of a break to find a way out of something slowly. And the reason that you do it is because, you know, there are two sides that you want and love so much, and you want to be able to hold on to both. But the more and more I tried to do that, the further and further they got, until finally I just had to let something go. And, you know, I love my family more than anything in the world. But eventually, I had to go and live my life. And so I let that part of me, my faith and my duty, go. And in the end, you just hope you make the right choices. Thank you.
Elna Baker is a writer and humorous storyteller. Her stories have been featured on radio programs such as This American Life, The Moth, BBC Radio 4, and Studio 360. She lives in New York City. Coming up, How to Kill a Sheep with Kindness. But first this.